Welcome everybody to the third double parsha in the last month, Bahar B'chukosai, which concludes the book of Vayikra. And last week we had only one, that was the only single one in the past month. Prior to that we had Va'acharei Kedoshim, and we had Tazria and Mitzora, then Acharei Mos and Kedoshim, and then Emor, and now we have Bahar B'chukosai. But at the same time as we're finishing something, we're also starting something else. Remember, Mesilas Yesharim. Everyone on the path? This year we're on the path of the just, and we have begun a new virtue, a new midah, a new trait. So we need to tip that one off, and then we need to address the parsha as well. So the last midah was precious, was abstinence. Now this, the new midah, the new virtue, is tahara, purity. Both abstinence and purity are what Rabbi Luzzatto calls the second half of the path, which is, remember the two stages of the path?
We're on the way to piety.
Piety. The first stage is tzidkus, righteousness. Mm-hmm. Righteousness means doing what is right. Fulfilling obligations, duties. Being dutiful. Not bootiful, dutiful. piety is being bootiful. Okay. Piety is going beyond duty, beyond the call of duty. And that began, the beginning of piety was abstinence. After a person is dutifully refraining from anything which is forbidden and fulfilling all which is required, a person begins to go beyond. And piety starts with abstinence. Moderation. Don't indulge in excess of even those things which are permissible. That was the midah of precious, that which we have been discussing for the last several weeks, before Pesach and after Pesach. So the path is moving ahead. It's not enough for us to fulfill our obligations now. We have to go beyond. What is tahara about? What is the next one? What is purity? Purity entails corrective measures aimed at the refinement of one's heart and thoughts. This idiom was used by David. This is page 105 in the Mesilas Yesharim in the Feldheim edition. Who said, David said in Tehillim, "Create for me, O God, a pure heart." Purity is purity of heart, not purity of deeds. Deeds is not in the realm of purity. Deeds is deeds. Purity is in the realm of heart and motive. The purpose of this virtue is that a person should prevent the evil inclination from influencing his actions. All his actions should be permeated with knowledge, and fear of the eternal should be free of sin and lustful desire. Not just free of sin, free of sinful desire. Let's read on to get a little bit of a better definition. This is relevant even to an action that involves one's physical and material needs. For even though one conducts himself with abstinence, taking from the world no more than what is essential. Okay, so we're addressing the person who's already on the level of abstinence. But he must still purify his heart and thought, so that the little that he does take should have nothing to do with pleasure and desire. Rather, the intent of his action should be directed toward the good that will emerge from this deed. and it should be bound to knowledge and the service of the Eternal. Wow.
What chapter?
Chapter 16. All right, so, my goodness. Already, everything I do has to be in fulfillment of the commandments. Now, more than that, I have to moderate even that which is allowed. And now you're telling me that even that which I'm allowed to take, because it's necessary, I can have no thoughts or intentions of enjoyment, of desire, only goodness, wisdom, and service. Is this possible? Am I a human being? What do you want from me? Well, don't worry. Don't worry, because as Rabbi Luzzatto says in an earlier page, he says, "Ein rov hatzibur yecholim lihios chasidim." Most people can't be chasidim. Avaldai lahem shiyu tzadikim. It's enough that they should be tzadikim, they should be righteous. Most people can't be chasidim anyhow. So don't worry about it. This is for angels. This is not for the common man. It sounds too far out of reach. So don't worry about it. But there are chasidim, and there must be, if there's such a midah, and it goes on from there. We're still going to learn about the chasidus, the actual virtue of piety, and then we're going to learn about anava, humility. It does go on. So maybe the question that's nagging at me a little bit is, how would I know if I have what it takes to even travel, continue down the path to chasidus? Okay, most people can't be a chassid, but how do I know if I could? What do I do? How do I check myself to know whether I even have what it takes? Does anybody out there have maybe just a thought that perhaps I have it within me that maybe I could be a chassid? Maybe. Okay, here's one volunteer.
to say, Jim, I think everything goes back to choice. I think that we have the ability to choose how we truly want to live and how we want to see ourselves, and to do this in a very pure way, that it's not an ego and it's not a pride thing. But you said something before which kind of generated the thought process for me that, you know, not all of this does not address the child, that we do certain things during different stages of our lives and how we grow and evolve into certain things. And again, you know, the way we choose to live, and if we feel like we're sacrificing or if we're gaining something from it, if we're being fulfilled, if we're giving up or...
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm sorry. All right. Very good. All right. Very, very nice words. We're going to come back to you. You really, in a nutshell, you kind of summed it up. I didn't want this to become a discussion at this moment right now, but I do want to ask this rhetorically, just to start to generate some thoughts. Since Wendy did say a few words, I appreciate what you said. Number one, if I could summarize, you say it's really within our power to choose. We could choose really to be however we want to be, as pure as we want to be. And you also said the idea of, I have to ask myself whether I see myself as giving up or gaining. And that's, I think that is that's the key, and that's what I'd like to develop with you. What we're going to do today is we're going to look at two examples in the two parshas that we have, and see if we can get a concept of what it might take, what kind of mental attitude or mental shift it might require to consider the level of chassidus. So the first example that I would like to look at is a famous example at the beginning of Parshas Bahar, the example of the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year. So God tells us that every 7 years, it's going to be Shabbos. Not a day of Shabbos, but a year of Shabbos. And, you know, typically we immediately start thinking about all the details and all the laws associated with Shabbos, and we ask questions, are you allowed to plant this? Are you allowed to do it that way? Let's turn that all off, and let's just introspect and say, if God told you, you were going to have to follow the Shemitah year, how would you react? What would your reaction? You were just told that you may not go to work. You may not, in contemporary terms, that means you may not go to your job. You may not get any money coming in, right? You have to stop all employment.
That means even not performing?
No, not. Oh. I'm not saying practically. I'm saying psychologically. You are not supposed to go to work. I'm trying to say, let's realistically think about what this means for us. No going to work, no paycheck coming in for the next 12 months. What is your reaction? No Social Security. All right. What is your reaction?
No way.
No way. No way, right? Okay. The Torah even says it. They didn't say no way, but they said... they said... the Chisomru, page 700 and verse 20. If you will say, what will we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we will not sow and not gather in our crops.
6 year crops. Isn't
I don't have any money coming in.
You got last year.
My savings are depleted. What am I going to do? Now the Sepharno, and I've mentioned this before in this class, it's a great Sepharno, he points out that the Torah only says, if you will say, if you will ask that question. Now, prior to this, God already answered our quest, and he said, you shall perform my decrees and observe my ordinances and perform them, then you shall dwell securely on the land. In other words, God has already, after giving us the mitzvah, he's already said, if you follow my commandments, you won't have to worry. You'll be taken care of. So the Sepharno says, that's enough for some people. But others will say, what will we eat? So the Sepharno says, because there's different levels of faith. You can say to one person, don't worry, God will provide. I'm serious. When God really said, I will provide. Okay, not like today when somebody says, well, I don't have to work because God will provide. That's different. You're saying that. You're saying that God will provide even if you don't take any initiative. You're saying that. Here, God is saying it. God says, I will provide. So, for some people, that's enough. That's enough faith. For others, they've got to see it. So, to them, God says, all right, I will ordain my blessing for you in the sixth year, and it will yield a crop sufficient for the 3 year period, and I will show you how it's going to work. I will show you the money in the bank. I will show you how the allotments will come in, how the allocations will be dispersed, and you'll see it in advance, and then you can rest assured. I would perhaps suggest that there may be a different explanation for these two reactions, these two strong reactions. One reaction, okay, God said he will provide. And the other reaction is, what are we going to eat? I would like to suggest that perhaps these are the reactions of the tzaddik and the chassid. You see, there's another difference between these two reactions. The first reaction, I'm suggesting, is the person who says, wow, neat, a year of no work. Why is God giving us this mitzvah? What's the purpose? Why is he doing this? You see, Shemitah has an incredible value, kind of like Shabbos. What's the value of Shabbos? Why did God give us Shabbos? See, one person might say, Shabbos? I can't work? I can't go to the store? I can't play golf? What a bummer. What a difficult day. Another person will say, Shabbos? What do I do with Shabbos? It's a time to get close to God. It's a time I don't have to worry about all of the things that I worry about all week long. I get to daven more. I get to learn more. I get to be with my family more. I get to be at peace. Different reaction. So that's why the first group of people, they don't ask the question, because they're not focused on their food. They're not focused on the hardship. They're not focused on what are we going to eat. They're focused on what are we going to do during Shemitah. What an opportunity. And the other person is just focused on what am I going to eat. Let's take another example. The other example is the very, very intense. I don't want to say good or bad. I just want to say intense. Teachings of the Chukosai. Because for some people, this is intensely bad, and for some people, it could be intensely good. This is the Miracles of Blessing and Curse, beginning on 708. The long list of blessings, the Art Scroll introduces this section, and the even longer list of curses could be misunderstood as an indication that there are many more curses than blessings. Actually, the blessings are given in general terms and are therefore brief. The curses, however, are given in great detail because they are intended to awe the people into obedience to God's will. So again, how do you react to this? God says if you keep the commandments, all will be good. Blessing, peace, prosperity, health. If you go away from my commandments, war, strife, illness, poverty. So a person could say, ugh, what does God want? He's so harsh. He's warning us. He's got us over the barrel with his ruler, threatening us, coercion. Or you could react like the Rambam says in the Laws of Teshuvah, which I think we've shared as well. We are promised by the Torah that if we fulfill it, Torah, with joy and good spirit and meditate on its wisdom at all times, God will remove all the obstacles which prevent us from fulfilling it. For example, sickness, war, famine, and the like. Similarly, he will grant us all the good which will reinforce our performance of the Torah, such as plenty, peace, and abundance of silver and gold, in order that we not be involved throughout all our days in matters required by the body, but rather will sit unburdened and thus have the opportunity to study wisdom and perform mitzvos, in order that we will merit the life of the world to come. The Rambam is saying that a person can look at the Parsha of Chukosai and say, my goodness, God is really motivating us to make the best possible use of this life, of our opportunity here, to connect with Him, which is what the purpose is. He doesn't want us to get distracted. He doesn't want us to waste our lives on mundane pursuits. And he's even kind of put in this guarantee, this safety valve, that if you get off course and you waste your life, I'm going to make it painful. I'm going to make it unpleasant. And that is going to bring you back to the purpose for which you were placed here. And I'm going to support you. And I'm going to bless you so that you can even do it more. I'm going to facilitate your observance of a life dedicated to the proper purpose. And a person could look at B'chu Kosai and say, what a wonderful world God has created with actual safety features, which actually lead us on the proper path. What's the difference between the negative reaction and the positive reaction? Both for Shemitah, one person can say, oy vey, what am I going to eat? Or the person that says, a whole year to serve God. A super Shabbos. What an opportunity. I can't wait until the next Shemitah. I hope I make it. What is the difference between someone who reads the blessings and curses and says, ugh, how can we bear this? What kind of a God is this? And a person who says, ah, God has promised that he will support us and give us the opportunity to engage in the life of Torah. And this, I think, is the crux of the issue. And this is, I think, the question we have to ask ourselves. Who are we? Are we made of tzidkus potential? I think everyone has the potential for tzidkus, for righteousness, because everyone has to acknowledge one way or the other. Assuming that we believe in God, assuming that we believe in the validity of the Torah, everyone understands the notion of responsibility and duty. But do I go beyond that? Do I go the next step? And I don't know. A number of years ago, I was given this to read. It's a Covey book, The Eighth Habit, by a wonderful rabbi who came and gave us, it was like a consultant, helped the Kollel rabbis reach a little higher, get a little bigger, to help ourselves to be successful. And one of the ideas that I remember that Covey talks about, really just one short paragraph, is this thing called abundance mentality. Anybody heard of that term before? Abundance mentality? Let me just read to you what that means. You have heard of it?
It's from someone else. A writer called Stein, S-T-E-Y-N, talks about this.
Really?
In the last Hillsdale, did you get
Mark
the
Stein.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, he doesn't use that phrase.
He doesn't, okay. Well, tell me if this is the same idea. Abundance mentality means that rather than seeing life as a competition with only one winner, you see it as a cornucopia of ever-enlarging opportunity, resources, and wealth. You don't compare yourself to others and are genuinely happy for their successes. The opposite, which is he calls scarcity-minded people, come out of a comparison-based identity, are threatened by the successes of others. Even though they might pretend and say otherwise, they know that it's eating their hearts out. Those with the abundance mentality see their competitors as some of their most valued and important teachers. Then he summarizes something he said before. Abundance mentality. It's not about, am I winning? But it's, what is this bigger picture around me that I'm a part of? Abundance. There's room for everyone, because this is a much, much bigger world than just the narrow view of my own space. I think that this I'm getting to the end.
No, the page of Mishneh Torah that you just read from.
Well, you need to know it's repentance, chapter 9, paragraph 1. It's different editions, but in this one, it is 205. And I think this might be at the core of the jump between Tzidkus and Chassidus. And I think this may help us just understand a little bit the concept of purity. See, this is bothersome and at first glance. It says that it's not enough that a person is abstaining, but even the little that he takes should have nothing to do with pleasure and desire. That's very bothersome to me. It sounds like yuck. But I don't know. I think that what it's saying is you have two people. Both are eating. Believe me, both of them taste the food. Both of them have taste buds that work. The food is tasty to both of them. They both enjoy their meal. But what's the difference? The first person, scarcity-minded person, he just cares about his meal. He just wants to make sure that his steak is prepared exactly the right way. not too rare, not too well done. And that next week, he hopes that if it didn't come out so good, next week he hopes that it will be better. And that is kind of what goes on in his head. He's thinking about my space. And the other person, he's thinking, he's all over the place. He's thinking abundantly. He's thinking about, why am I alive? He's thinking about, who are the other people in my life? Who's this God, and what did he have in mind for us? What are the great opportunities? And boy, I understand that life can be enjoyable, and that every once in a while I'm going to have a steak and it'll taste delicious, but I'm not going to obsess about my steak. I think that's what he means here. He has nothing to do with pleasure and desire. It doesn't mean that he doesn't taste the steak. It just means that that's not what drives him in life. When he hears about an opportunity to do Shemitah, the first thing on his mind is not, what am I going to eat? It's, what am I going to do with my year that God, I know, has already promised that we will have what to eat. So I'm not going to ask about the food. I'm going to ask about the other things. I know the food will be there. Food is a part of a bigger picture. There is pleasure in life, but that's not why I live. I don't live for pleasure. I live for life, and life has pleasure. I think that the question that we must ask ourselves, whether we are, whether we qualify for even embarking or even thinking about Chassidus, is this question: do I have scarcity? Am I scarcity-minded or am I abundant-minded? And that's the way I relate to pleasure, and that's the way I relate to challenges, and that's the way I relate to the curses, because I realize there's a bigger picture. God doesn't want me to stay my whole life and just think about my food, and that's why he said that if I do, there's going to be pain and suffering. And I'm not talking about, you have to always be very careful. Nobody's pointing fingers. Nobody is saying, this is why such and such happened to you because you were blank. We don't talk that way because we have no idea why things happen in the specific way. We do know that God has created for us a full, harmonious world. There's a reason for the good. There's a reason for the consequences. And it's all a test for us whether we're going to be abundant-minded about it or scarcity-minded. And I think that the question we should ask ourselves is if we should go on down this path further and further is, how do I see the path? Do I see the path getting narrower and narrower and more uncomfortable? Or perhaps I see the path getting wider and wider. If we see the path getting wider, if we see ourselves growing, then I think that we have an affinity towards piety. If I see the path just getting narrower and narrower and more constricted, and less food, and less pleasure, and fewer steaks, and then maybe we should stick with tzitzis.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.